I'm going to ask if you would to open your Bibles this morning to Mark chapter 4. Mark's Gospel, the fourth chapter. God willing, today and tomorrow we're going to look at two passages in which people ask the same question of Jesus. Today we're in Mark, and tomorrow, God willing, we'll be in Luke. Mark chapter 4, beginning in verse 35. This is God's word. That day, when evening came, he said to his disciples, "Let us go over to the other side." Leaving the crowd behind, they took him along just as he was in the boat. There were also other boats with him. A furious squall came up, and the waves broke over the boat so that it was nearly swamped. Jesus was in the stern, sleeping on a cushion. The disciples woke him and said to him, "Teacher, don't you care if we drown?" He got up, rebuked the wind, and said to the waves, "Quiet, be still." Then the wind died down and it was completely calm. He said to his disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" They were terrified and asked each other, "Who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him." May God add his blessing to this reading from his holy and inspired word. Lord, don't you care? I don't know about you, but I've had times in my life when I seemed to be in a situation that I thought was legitimate circumstance for God to intervene. To me, it seemed like this was one of those times when I can't fix this, and it needs to be fixed, and in fact, no earthly human power can really straighten this out. So God, this is one of those jobs for you. From time to time over the years, I've had ideas about what other people ought to do with their resources. I've had ideas about how people should use their energies and their influence and so forth. It seems perfectly reasonable to me to be able to look at the situation and just see, well, clearly, if this person would just do this, that would fix this. And I'm often tempted to do that with God. It seems to me he has all power. So, you know, what's to interfere with his doing my will? Well, obviously, it's the fact that I'm not God. Okay, he not only has all power, he has all authority. He's in charge. I'm not. And so the idea that somehow I should be able to direct God to do what I want, I know intellectually, isn't right. But emotionally, sometimes I feel like this is one of those moments when I need this, I'm not getting this, therefore, God, don't you care? Now, if anybody else can relate to that, would you nod your head? Okay. I mean, it's one of those situations where clearly God could fix this. And yet it seems that God is not fixing this. And yet clearly we know he's got the power. And yet clearly nothing is improving. May even be getting worse. So what's the deal? Why isn't God doing what it seems obvious needs to be done and is within his power? Well, this was one of those times for the disciples. Jesus said to them at evening, "Let's go over to the other side." So they got in the boat and they headed out, and Jesus went to sleep. It had been a long day. Jesus had been teaching. He was tired. Jesus got tired, by the way. In case you didn't know that, Jesus got tired. He got hungry. He got thirsty. He even got frustrated. Here, Jesus was tired, and Jesus went to sleep. He's sleeping on a cushion in the stern of the boat, and they're headed out across the waves. But a storm comes up, and the storm is so strong, the waves are not just bashing against the boat, they are breaking over the boat, and the boat is filling up with water. Now, sometimes a wave will come and splash water into your boat, and it's like, oh, wow. And then maybe some other waves will come, and you go, whoa, whoa. But this is one of those situations where so much water is coming into the boat that the boat is filling up with water. It says here they were nearly swamped. Now, do you know what nearly swamped means? That's when the boat's full of water. That means you're not really above the water anymore. You might as well be swimming. All right? And so the boat was nearly swamped. This was a legitimate need, a real problem that these guys had. It wasn't just that they were saying, oh, this is bumpy. God, please make it stop being bumpy. It wasn't like that. This is a situation where the boat was filling up with water, and you can't keep going like that. Okay? So they had a real problem. And it seems reasonable to us that they would feel the way that they did and maybe even do what they did, wake Jesus up. Okay? Now, they knew clearly that he could do something or they wouldn't awaken him. Like, well, you know, we could wake Jesus, but he's sleeping and we're about to drown anyway, so what does it matter? No, they knew that Jesus had power. They just didn't have a clue how much power he had. And so they say to him, don't you care? I remember being awakened by my wife when there was a horrible storm up at our house. We found out later that the winds had gone above 110 miles an hour up on Cove Mountain above our home. And those winds had come down off the mountain and slammed into my house and removed part of the roof, just the metal from the roof. The roof decking itself, thank God, stayed intact, but peeled back some of the metal. And so the metal was flapping up and down with the gusts of wind. And the wind had broken through the front door into our home. I mean, just absolutely shattered the wood and broke into our house. And before the night was over, it would break in through the front door and break out through the door on the other side of the living room, shattering the wood on that side too. That's how powerful the wind was. And shattered the front wall of our home. We had a great big wall that was kind of like a huge sail made of glass. In retrospect, not necessarily the best design to put on the side of a mountain, but we liked it. And it held up very well for a number of years until that one storm came and went to our house. My wife woke me and said, what is that noise? And I said, it sounds like the roof being peeled back. I mean, my feeling was, I'm not going to get up there in this storm and try and nail it down. You know, I mean, whatever happens, happens. And so she said, well, aren't you going to get up? I said, no. I can't do anything about it. I mean, I couldn't stop the wind. I mean, I didn't try. I guess I could have gone out and said, stop, peace, be still. But I didn't think of that. So, you know, I just thought I'd lie there in bed until the storm was over and hopefully we'd all live through it. And, I mean, I have a fairly passive approach to life. You know, I watch as things happen and I say, wow, that was amazing. But my wife got up and went outside our bedroom where the wind was whirling around, blowing things. And she called to me, and there was an urgency in her tone that made me feel that I was indeed supposed to get up. So I did. Now, here's the thing. I don't know what my wife thought I could do. But she didn't want to feel like she was alone in the storm. She didn't want to feel like I was missing it. Okay? We may not be able to stop this thing, but we at least ought to be paying attention to it together. And it may be that that was some of what was in the disciples' attitude. You know, even if Jesus isn't going to do anything, it's just not right that he should be sleeping right now. Okay? He ought to be up. He ought to get up and at least be alert to the fact that this storm is going on, the boat's filling up with water, and we're in danger here. So they woke him. But they woke him with the question, Lord, don't you care? Lord, don't you care that we're about to drown? Well, drown? These guys, many of them were commercial fishermen. You mean to tell me that some fishermen can't swim? Well, actually, some fishermen can't swim. I know that from my years on Cape Cod. Some fishermen really can't swim. Amazes me that somebody would make a living in a boat, on the water, and not know how to swim. But there really are people like that. However, even if all these guys were swimmers, I think their feeling would be if the boat can't make it, a good swimmer might have trouble too, right? I mean, this was not a slight squall. This was a huge storm, and it was in the process of swamping the boat. So, they wake Jesus up with that question. And what I want to try and communicate to you this morning is, if you find yourself in a situation like that, you're not alone. Not only are you not the first person to be in that situation, but the fact that it doesn't seem to you as if God is showing his care for you does not mean that God isn't right there with you and that he doesn't have the situation well in hand. When Jesus was awakened by them with that impertinent question that they honestly asked from the heart, Lord, don't you care? Jesus dealt with the problem. He did. He could have simply given them a sermon about the sovereignty of God and trusting God in every circumstance, and don't be afraid, and so forth and so on. He could have done that. But Jesus knew at that moment the thing to do was what the Father told him to do, and that was to make the storm stop. And so Jesus, get this, verse 39, rebuked the wind. Now, just try and process that for a minute. What's a rebuke? A rebuke is when you tell somebody they're doing the wrong thing. Okay? Jesus told the weather, the wind, cut it out. Stop that. And the wind was like, why? Because Jesus is in charge. He's the Lord of all. He is the ruler of creation. This is the word by which the universe was created. It is the word by whom the universe is held together at this very moment. This is the eternal God manifesting his glory. And before him, the mountains quake and the wind has to obey. There was no argument back from the wind. Okay? Jesus rebuked the wind and the wind stopped. And Jesus said to the waves, now the waves were so great, so huge, they were swamping the boat. Jesus said to the waves, quiet, be still. And they just quieted right down. Immediately. And it was completely calm. Have you ever watched waves and how it takes a while for things to settle down? Okay? If there were big waves going on, and now suddenly it's completely calm, that would be spooky. Okay? I mean, that would be scary. And the disciples were scared. They didn't say, "Oh, phew, boy, that was close. I was afraid we were going to drown, but now everything's great." No, they were terrified. Sometimes when we ask God to fix our problem and He does, instead of feeling relaxed, we get more nervous. You understand? Because, see, we thought our problem was big. But when God deals with the problem, all of a sudden we realize, wow, how big is our God? God doesn't just have lots of power. He has all power. And Jesus was able to speak and have the wind stop and the waves stop and the sea grow completely calm. Completely calm. Just process that for a minute. Huge waves crashing over the boat, no waves. How's that happen? I could see how something really big could strike the Sea of Galilee and cause tremendous waves. But knowing how water works and how wave action occurs, the only way I can imagine that it could go from huge waves to absolutely calm instantly is if, like, God did something. Well, that's the point here. That's precisely the point. Only God could do this. Only God could instantly calm the waters, calm the storm. Folks, sometimes we think in order for God to fix our situation, it's going to take some time. Okay? I mean, you know, it took us a while to get into this situation, and even if God intervenes, it's going to be a long journey out. Well, that's often the case. A lot of times it is. But not always. Sometimes God instantly turns it around. Years ago, when I was pastoring in Atlanta, just as I was leaving to come up here and start the ranch, there was a fellow who asked me to please come to his home. He came and visited our church, and after the service, he met me at the door, and he asked if I'd please come to his home and talk with him. So there was an urgency about it. I didn't know what was going on, but I didn't know the man. But I said, sure, I'll come. He gave me his address. It was close to the church, and that Sunday afternoon, I went to his home. His home was something else. I mean, it was a palace. It was huge. Huge home. Gated driveway. Pavers, enormous columns, more than a two-story foyer, marble floors, oriental rugs. I mean, just amazing. And I said to him, I mean, it was like a work of art. I said to him when he came to the door, this may be the most beautiful home I've ever seen. And he said, well, thank you, we just lost it. I said, oh, I'm so sorry. He said, well, come in. We went back to the den, and he began telling me about his story. I won't tell you his whole life story. I'll just tell you that God had allowed this guy to run away from responsibilities and run away from God, and do his own thing and build his own kingdom. And right when he thought he had everything he wanted, it all came crashing down. And the creditors were taking his house and his furnishings, his oil paintings and oriental rugs and antiques. I mean, he had literally acquired things and designed features of the house around those things. I mean, this house was his treasure. It was his pride and joy. It was his masterpiece. He had beautiful grounds, swimming pool, tennis court, acreage, in an area where you couldn't get acreage. I mean, it was quite a place. And now it was all going away. The huge multi-bay garage, the vehicles, everything, it's all going away. And this guy has in the process of losing his business, his house, his belongings. And he was at an age in life when it wasn't realistic to start over again. And he was wanting me to talk to him to try and persuade him not to take his own life, because he couldn't see any way of going forward. Well, I told him that what happened to his house, and his business, and his possessions really didn't matter all that much compared to what was going to happen to him. Because where you spend eternity, there are no do-overs. You can't decide, oh, I've made a huge mistake, I'd like to go back and repent. Once you're dead, it's sealed. And so we talked about sin and salvation. And he understood and genuinely believed that his only hope was Jesus. And he said, I don't understand any reason why God would want me. But if he's willing to save me, I need to be saved. And he prayed and he gave his life to Christ. And he didn't make any deals. God, if you'll do this, I'll do this. He just said, God, please have mercy on me. Just sincerely asked God to save him. Well, on the basis of God's promises, I was able to assure him that God had saved him. That prayer of his, which he prayed from the heart, he wasn't having to repeat after me. He was just pouring out his heart to God. And it was humble and contrite and real. That prayer was evidence of God's work in this man's life. And so I assured him, I don't know what's going to happen to you in the next 5 years, but I know where you're going to spend forever. And that's the thing that matters most. So now you just trust God to guide you from here on out, and he'll take care of you. And he'll help you take care of your family. Well, I didn't know what would happen. He'd lost his business, he'd lost his house, he'd lost his possessions. He owed it all to the creditors. And there's a story behind that too, but bottom line is, it was too late to save all that stuff. Unless, of course, God chose to intervene. He called me and he said, you're not going to believe this. But he said, I just had a meeting with my creditors and they said that what they want to do is totally restructure my debt. And they're going to take as payment of a bunch of my debt the parts of my business that are losing money. And they're going to let me keep the parts that are making money. Which means I'm freed from the stuff that's been drowning me and I get to keep the stuff that's good. And that'll enable me to pay off in just a few years what I owe them, the rest of what I owe them. And he said, I may even get to keep my house. This happened within like 48 hours after our meeting. He was blown away. He said, I've been around in business a long time. Banks don't do that. He said, they want the parts of your business that are making money. He said, they took the parts that aren't, and they know what's what. He said, they're going to help me. And he said, I'm going to be able to get out of debt in just a few years. And I said, well, that's really tremendous. Well, he called me back another day or two later, and he said, Pastor, you're not going to believe this. He said, a person came to our house, and you know, I mean, because we were losing the house, we didn't have a for sale sign or anything because, I mean, it was too late for that. He said, these people came to our house. They're moving from California. They said they've been driving around this area looking for a place to buy, and they saw our house, and they said to the realtor, that's the house we'd like to get. And the realtor said, well, that house isn't for sale. And they said, well, can we ask them if they'd sell? And the realtor said, well, I guess. So they came to our house and they offered to buy our house for more than we could have imagined. And they're willing to pay cash. And they asked us if we'd be willing to show them through the inside. And when they went through the inside, they said, "Wow, we'd love to buy a lot of these furnishings too. Would you be willing to sell us some of the antiques and the paintings and the rugs and stuff?" And I said, "If the price is right." And he said, "And they're buying that stuff too." He said, "We're going to walk away from this." And he said, "Now that I know Jesus, I don't need this stuff." He said, "I don't care. Before I knew him, I felt like I needed all this stuff to make me important. Now, I don't need any of this." He bought a house for about one-tenth of what he sold that house for. It was a little further out from town. And he said, "I love it. Before, if we wanted our child to play with somebody, we had to arrange to have someone drive that child over to our house to play. And I was always concerned about what if something happens at the pool, somebody sneaks into the yard at night or when we're on vacation and drowns in the pool, I'm going to get sued, I could lose everything." He said, "Now we've got a neighborhood pool. My wife and I take our son to the neighborhood pool and he's got a bunch of friends. We like it a lot better. I don't have to worry about what happens if somebody gets in our pool because it's the neighborhood pool and there's an insurance policy that covers the whole neighborhood." He said, "All the stuff I used to have to take care of and supervise and make sure was getting done," he said, "now other people are doing that. My life is so much easier. I've got neighbors and friends. My child has friends. My life is so much better." How long did it take God to turn all that stuff around for him? Less than a week. Stuff that he'd taken years to mess up. Does that happen all the time, Pastor? No, that happened over 20 years ago, and I'm still telling the story today. It's an unusual event. Just like this was an unusual event in the Bible, when Jesus said to the wind, "Shut up." That's a paraphrase. But it says he rebuked the wind, and he told the waves, "Quiet, be still." Then the wind died down and it was completely calm. And he said to his disciples, "Why are you so afraid? Why are you so afraid? Do you still have no faith?" Well, how much faith do we have to have in order to have peace in the midst of a storm? Depends on what you have faith in. Well, your faith is only as good as the object of your faith. If I really believe with all my heart in fairies, okay, and I think Tinkerbell is out there somewhere to serve my needs, and so I cross my fingers and close my eyes and I say, I believe, I'm just loony. Okay? Because Tinkerbell is make-believe. But if I believe in Jesus, I don't even have to have huge faith. Just faith like a mustard seed. Just a little bit of faith. If my faith is in him, great things happen. Great things happen. Because Jesus is real. And he has all power. And so, Jesus says to them, "Do you still not have any faith? You still have no faith? Why are you so afraid?" And I would submit to you this morning that we need to hear his question when we are asking, "Lord, don't you care?" And he says to us, "Why are you so afraid? Do you still not have any faith?" You see, he's not the one who's deficient. It's not for lack of caring on his part. It's for lack of faith on ours. And we need to believe that he is there and that he cares. So, when Jesus asked them that question, they said, wow, he's right. Silly, silly us. What were we thinking? Is that right? No, actually, verse 41 says they were terrified. Jesus says, why are you so afraid? And instead of getting calm, they got more nervous. Because now it wasn't the storm that seemed so big, it was Jesus. They said, who is this? Even the wind and the waves obey him. Folks, if the wind and the waves obey him, what do we need to do? Obey him. Obey him. Obey him. Jesus is Lord. He's to be obeyed. He is to be reverenced. He is to be worshiped. And if you think the storm is big, if you think your problems are big, you need to get your eyes unto Jesus. Because Jesus is a lot bigger than any storm, any problems, and he'll enable you to have peace in the midst of the storm. Does God care about us? Absolutely. He doesn't care about everything we care about. God willing, more about that next time. But I want you to understand, he does care about us. Not one sparrow falls to the ground apart from his notice. He cares about us. He cares about his creation. He cares about his children. He cares about us. But that doesn't mean that he will always do what we want, when we want. And so when the storm is raging and the waves are breaking over our boat, we need to remember this and not think for a minute that somehow he doesn't care. And not think for a minute that this problem may be too big for him. And not think for a minute that it would take God a long time to fix this. God can fix it like that. God said, let there be light. And there was light. God can do anything except violate his own character. And so don't think, well, even God couldn't fix this. God is not only the creator, he is the one who saves. And he is still saving today.